If you arrived here from another planet and took a quick perusal of our popular culture, you might get the impression that love and romance are important to us. We love to be in love, but also acknowledge the difficulties of getting to that place. But you know, we do know a lot about the human brain and how it works, and we can use that information to help us find people in love. So says Duana Welch, a psychologist and author from Texas, now living in Eugene. A few years ago, she changed direction and began to focus on the psychology of love. She started a blog on love and science and is the author of a book, Love Factually, 10 Proven Steps from I Wish to I Do. She speaks at the Eugene Library tomorrow, Saturday at 3, and she's our guest now. Duana, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jeffrey, thank you so much for having me on.
Sure. Tell us about what propelled you into applying science to romance.
Well, I wasn't very good at dating, to tell you the truth. So I got really curious about how we love and why we love. And initially, I was only curious about it from a very personal standpoint. I really wanted my life to go better. It had not occurred to me that this would eventually become my living or my passion more generally, but it has.
So, I mean, I want to make it clear, you were studying psychology, but not relationships. What had been your focus?
I actually have a PhD, but not in relationship science. It's in memory and aging, so not very closely related.
Huh, okay. So I mean, how earnestly had you embarked upon the search for Mr. Right, to use your term in the book?
Well, it was... I treated it like a part-time job. I mean, I actually took it very seriously. I would say that for several years, it was as much of a concern or almost as much of a concern as my career. And, you know, I feel kind of vindicated for that because a lot of people were critical of that choice that I made to treat it so seriously and so earnestly. But science has since shown me that our choice of life partner reflects more on our happiness, our health, our wealth, our longevity, even our career trajectory than any other decision we will make. So it's actually worth our time to take it seriously.
We're healthier and more complete people, you think, with partners?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
We are healthier and more complete people, do you think, with partners?
Yeah, I do. So there's one large study I'm thinking of in particular, spearheaded by Dr. Linda Waite in Chicago, where she got data about people who were living in lots of different circumstances. Some of them were cohabiting, some of them were married, some of them were divorced, some of them were single, never married, some of them were widowed. And this was a representative sample, meaning that scientifically the odds that she was going to come to a conclusion that did not reflect all American adults, the odds she wouldn't reach the right conclusion were under 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more than 95% chance she's going to reach the right conclusion with these particular data. And the conclusion she reached was when people are married, they are healthier, they are wealthier, they're having more sex, the sex they're having is better, their careers are going better, their children are doing better, their odds of death in any given year are lower, and those benefits are only conferred during marriage and not before or after. So it's probably not that there's some kind of person that just doesn't get married, if that makes sense.
It does, but that's really interesting what you just said, though, that all those benefits are conferred in marriage, not before.
Yeah, not before and not after. It turns out that marriage, although we like to think of it as a romantic union just between two people, it's actually a social contract. And so when we enter into it, we treat one another differently, and everyone around us treats us differently. It's very interesting. She has this wonderful anecdote. I've been in communication with her. She has this wonderful anecdote about a couple that she interviewed where they had been really close friends and they had decided that since all of their buddies were getting married and getting lots of nice, cool wedding gifts, that they would get married. And they agreed between themselves. We'll call them Kate and Jim. Kate and Jim agreed between themselves that this wasn't a real marriage. This was just so they could kind of cash in on all the cool stuff. So they got married, they cashed in on all the cool stuff, they were living together because they were roommates anyway, and Kate and Jim decided, you know what, let's date other people, because we're not really dating each other anyway. So they tried, and their friends wouldn't go along with it. Their friends said, but you're married. And they said, no, really, we're not. We just, you know, did that to get the cool stuff. And they said, no, you're married. So nobody would touch either one of them, except, you know, I mean, Kate and Jim were kind of not screwed, I guess you would say, instead of screwed. And then they tried to tell the IRS that they weren't married. And the IRS said, yeah, you know, we've got this marriage certificate here. You're married. So it turned out that nobody would agree with them that they weren't married. And then they started to notice that certain aspects of their lives were going differently but better. Well, long story short, Kate and Jim divorced because they hadn't wanted to be married to begin with. They realized that marriage was this institution with its own set of expectations and kind of prods, and they didn't want that. They divorced, and then they realized that they really did love each other. They really got married in spirit, not just on paper, and they said it was the best decision they ever made. It really gave them this whole package of benefits which they had formerly been resisting.
Wow, that's a really a circuitous path to get to the good place.
Yeah, and I've seen this kind of thing in my clients' lives and in the lives of people who write to me, which is where, you know, my book tells some of my story, but it also tells a lot of other people's stories. Of course, I changed the names and identifying details to protect the guilty / innocent, but... But I am very honest about the parts of my story that I share, and I definitely have found this. I actually struggled with clinical depression and anxiety for a few years before I met my husband. And, you know, I've never had it again.
Really? Huh.
Never. And this is a not uncommon outcome of getting married to someone who is able to join you in helping you find your best interest and you theirs.
Duana Welch is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She'll be giving a free love science class at the Eugene Library tomorrow and at 3 o'clock. And you can join us now as we talk about her work. Her book is Love Factually. I love that. Love Factually with an F. Her blog is lovesciencemedia.com. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So here you were studying psychology, just not this branch of psychology, and seeking love and not having a lot of success with it, apparently, or not any permanent success. Was there a moment for you?
I'm sorry, was there a real what moment?
Was there a real well duh moment where you thought, oh, I should be combining what I know as a profession, psychology, with what I'm trying to do personally?
Yeah, there was a moment when it occurred to me that I was then getting my PhD in memory and aging, but that it might be the case that something as important as love had been studied by other nerds, just not me, and that maybe I should try to find out what they had already learned instead of continually reinventing the wheel. I had a few, you know, fortunately, my book identifies problems that are very common that people have, and it tells them kind of how to remedy those problems in their search for love. Some of these problems have to do with preparing ourselves for love, and some of these problems have to do with changing some of our thinking to direct it away from myths that we might believe. And some of these problems have to do with picking a partner or being in relationship with a partner in the courtship phase so that they can understand what our interest is and what our intentions are. And then other aspects have to do with the decision to commit. I didn't have all those problems. I had some of those problems. And but I started just, once I started embarking on this for me, I started getting curious about all of it. And I read more and more and more about all the areas where people could have problems, not just mine. And what's funny, after I solved my own particular problem, I got a call from someone in another part of the country saying that she had heard what I'd done for myself. She really wanted me to do it for her. And this was my first client. I initially said, well, you know, I'm busy. I'm a new professor at this university, and I'm heading up this research lab on memory and aging, and this really isn't my field to begin with. It's a strong interest of mine. She said, well, how about if I pay you a lot of money? And I said, okay, I can do that.
So what is the practice about now? I mean, the clients you have, you do what with them?
Well, so basically I identify, or they identify, what it is they want to have be different. For example, some people just want to know whether or not they even want a permanent mateship. Not everybody wants that. But because some people are told that over and over by their families of origin, society, etc., maybe they need to let go of that. Most people that I see, though, kind of my sweet spot in the practice, is people who are what I call involuntarily single. Some of you out there are voluntarily single. You want to be single, and that's totally fine. But there are a lot of people, like I had been, who are involuntarily single. They feel that their lives would be richer and better with the right partner. They want to find that person. They want to know how to get on the right foot from the very first time that they meet that person. And those are most of my clients. I also have some clients who are married who want to interact more effectively with their partner or who want to explore an issue in greater depth. But I'm not a therapist. So usually, unless it's something very, very short term where I can just apply the research and move on with married folks, mostly I send married people to therapists with a certain kind of licensure that's scientifically proven to help married couples.
Duana Welch, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She applies social science research to real-life relationship issues. She's been a professor at universities in Florida, California, and Texas, writes and consults for Psychology Today, eHarmony, and Redbook, has her own book called Love Factually, 10 Proven Steps from I Wish to I Do, speaks at the Eugene Library tomorrow at 3. You can talk to her now, 800-838-3760 over the phone. Emails come to jx@jeffnet.org. I guess the more I have thought about this since I laid out how to approach the interview last night was the fact that this is like the one area of life where we are really totally unscripted. You can't get away with just approaching someone who you're attracted to and trying to read off a piece of paper or something. So we have to think on our feet in these in forming relationships more than in any other time in our lives, I think.
That's actually a really great observation and one that nobody has made before with me in an interview, so I'm impressed. relationships at their early stage are a social intelligence test. And I think, and they're a judgment festival. I mean, there's an institution whose sole purpose is to heavily judge and critique other people, and that institution is called dating. So it's very nerve-wracking for a lot of people. Part of what I have found myself doing with clients is helping them mitigate their anxiety, because once you kind of have a clear roadmap of what to do, a lot of your anxiety will become manageable. I've met clients who are wonderful human beings whose anxiety is so, the anxiety is so difficult for them to control that most of their, what we cognitive scientists would call working memory capacity, their active desktop and what they can think about right this minute, most of that is taken up with anxious thoughts, and there's very little left over for paying attention to their partner and moving the relationship along and seeming appealing. And so one of the things I recommend for a lot of folks is it's a both-and world. You can hire someone like me, or me specifically, and you can get medical help for your anxiety and depression. I did that. I didn't just find Vic. I also got help for my anxiety and depression. Because you need, if you're that anxious, you need about 3 feet, I call it 3 feet of space between you and your feelings, so that in that space, you can recognize that feeling, but you are not compelled to act on it.
That is the really key part when I think about this, is that you're talking about taking a scientific approach to something that is just drenched with emotions. And so you have to be able to give yourself some distance. And there it is. You're saying 3 feet between you and your emotions.
Yeah, it really helps because, you know, I used to have this real bias against arranged marriage. And I understand that most people in the United States naturally would have that bias. I think about the kind of people my parents might have chosen for me, and I just shudder. and I get that. What intrigued me was that as I started learning about how arranged marriages really pan out, even in the United States, and I'm not talking about marriages with a 9-year-old girl. I'm not talking about marriages where the family forced a child or a woman against her will to be with someone she found repugnant. I'm talking about most arranged marriages. Most arranged marriages work out better than chosen marriages. We know that from some science that has been conducted, including one study I really like out of Jaipur, India, where people were compared who had chosen their partners versus their parents had chosen their partners. And it turned out that when people first married, of course, the people who picked their partners were more in love. But at the 5-year mark, that pattern had flipped. So now it was the people who had not chosen their partners, the arranged marriage people who were more in love. And at the 10-year mark, the effect had doubled. The people were twice as in love who had not chosen their marriages as those who had. And so I got really interested in this, and I thought, I wonder if I know anybody in an arranged marriage who I could talk to about this. And it turned out I knew a lot of people, because at the time I was teaching at Austin Community College, and that's a commuter college with a lot of people from around the world. It was very common for me to have students from 10 different countries in my classes, spread out across three classes, and I had a lot of men and women in arranged marriages. I only ever met one who was not happy. No, I met two, but it's interesting. I misspoke. Both of them had gone against their parents' advice and married the person that their parents said not to marry.
Huh.
So all the people I knew who had actually taken their family's advice were very happy. Why would that be? Well, so I had to have a root canal years ago. I know that's TMI, but there's a reason I'm telling you. I had to have a root canal. And my endodontist, yes, I have an endodontist. My endodontist was, is from India, but has lived in America for a very long time. And she is in an arranged marriage. And I didn't quite know she was in an arranged marriage, but I surmised that she might be. So I said, would you mind if I interviewed you briefly? You know, this is something that's really interesting to me. I'd like to write about it. And if you're in an arranged marriage, would you be willing to talk to me about that? And she said, yes, you would. And I said, so how does this work out? Do your parents, you know, force you to marry somebody? Do they, is there a penalty if you don't? And she said, are you kidding me? Look, I'm a doctor. I'm hardly barefoot and chained to a sink somewhere. She said, I was getting my medical degree. I did not want to take the time to date and have my heart broken and date and have my heart broken and date, and you can guess the rest. She said, I wanted someone who knew me so well that they knew exactly the kind of person who would suit me, to go out, find that person, present him to me, and if I liked the way he looked, I could know that I could have sex with him, make babies with him, fall in love with him, and it would all be safe.
Wow.
And she said, that's what arranged marriage really is. It's the best dating service in the world. My parents spent years on this project while I got a medical degree. And she said, they introduced me to three different people. Obviously, they stopped introducing me to people when I liked one of them. And I'm now married and have been married for years and have two teenage children, and we're very happy. You know, and I'm paraphrasing what she said, but in effect, this is what she said. She said, parents love their children. They want their children's happiness. And in our culture, children are raised so close to their parents that the parents really do know what the kids want. And so they presented me with three options, two of whom I just simply wasn't attracted to. Third, I was. He felt the same way about me. And then we knew we could get married and fall in love at our leisure because we were already well matched from the beginning. I heard somebody say that in relationships, the boat sinks because of holes that were there from the first day. And I think that really, there's a lot of truth to that. What's happening in these arranged marriages is that the holes are not there, so the boat floats. And so what I'm trying to do with my book and my teaching, and tomorrow will be kind of a mini class about this, I think I'm going to organize it around the idea of why do we love and how do we love? And what I'm really trying to get at is that love is really an important enterprise. It's worthy of our time. But at the same time, we need to be a little dispassionate at the very beginning stages so that we're safe to fall wildly for someone who is right for us.
All right. So you have to almost check a few things off on a list or something to make sure that the person you're talking to is potentially has some compatibility with you.
Yeah, you need to actually make a list, by the way. That's probably the most important thing in my book. And probably the most important thing that I do with my clients. And it's funny, a lot of my clients have approached because of the book. I now have clients in Australia and Canada and the United States. And my book is about to come out in Japanese and Spanish globally.
Wow.
But I don't speak Japanese or Spanish, so I don't know how many clients I'll have from there. But But I start out by saying, when they say, oh, I'm approaching you because I read the book, I'll say, well, that's great. Have you made your list yet? And about half of them haven't. It's a real mistake. You need to put in positive language what you must have. And an easy way to think about that is, think over relationships you've had or relationships you've heard of, and think about the things where you thought, I could never live with that. Now, put that on your list in a positive spin. For example, let's say that your sister divorced an alcoholic, and you thought, oh, my God, I could never live with an alcoholic. You might want to say someone who drinks responsibly. That would be one of your must-haves. You want to put it in positive language.
Yeah, I see that. You're stating positive, yeah.
Yeah, you have to keep everything positive, and the reason for that is that your brain doesn't process the word not very effectively. So if you say not an alcoholic, your brain kind of conjures up an alcoholic.
Interesting. So, wow. So you have to essentially come into this with much more of an analytical approach then. I mean, you have to look at your own potential romance analytically first, and then you can let the emotions follow?
Ideally, we arrange our own marriages. I mean, I am in an arranged marriage. I arranged it. And I'm very, very happy. And what's interesting about doing it this way is I love my husband now more than when we got together. I love him now more than when we got married. We're coming up on our 9th anniversary. I love him more, not less. So I started with basic compatibility, and I started with basic compatibility regardless of whether I was overwhelmingly physically drawn to him. And there were men I was very, very drawn to that I turned away from. It's not just about feeling attracted. You know, I think there are some myths that make it very hard to do what I'm recommending doing. And one of them is that love is rare, and that if you find someone you start to feel love for, that you have to go for that because love is so rare. And what we know is the world is brimming with sexy, bright, beautiful, wonderful human beings.
All right. Dwayna Welch is our guest on The Exchange. Her approach is called Love Science. Her website is lovesciencemedia.com. Her book is called Love Factually. And she'll be at the Eugene Library tomorrow in person at 3 o'clock. Dwayna, thanks so much for joining us today in The Exchange.
Thank you. It was wonderful to be here.
All right. Take it easy.